This is Galesburg's Evening News on WGIL. I'm Will Stevenson. Thanks for joining us tonight. We're going to get an update on probably the process of one of the more difficult things the Galesburg School Board at some point or another has to contend with every year, but this may be a bit of a stronger meaning since the pandemic has caused everything to go into some form of chaos, at least in terms of education. The district is considering reductions in force of non-essential staff in some areas because of the district not knowing yet what learning is going to look like in the fall and budgetary matters. So we're going to talk about both with District 205 Superintendent John Asplund, who is on the phone right now. I feel like I may need education myself today. John, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Or at least a speech class for me today. I don't know what the deal is. But anyway, this is something you've been looking at for the last almost month or so now. How close are you to recommending a decision to the board at this point?
Well, we're going to meet sometime during the week of June 22nd. So at the end of the last night's meeting, we decided that was the week we would choose. And at that point, we're going to need to make some sort of recommendation for at least the GEA positions, the Galesburg Education Association positions, because we have language in the contract that is very specific about when we can issue RIF notices. And we've gone past that date a long time ago, but in the spring, we were able to get an extension on our current language in the contract. So our deadline with GEA employees is July 1st. So unless we get another extension from the GEA, we would have to make a decision by that date, and that means we'd have to provide notice by that date. So we really need to do it a few days before that. So I guess that's a long-winded answer to a short question, but you know, we're hoping that we get some sort of information. I'm hopeful. I'm not really, you know, counting on it, but I'm hopeful that maybe we would get some more direction on how school would likely open up in the fall, because that's really what this issue is about.
That was going to be my next question. What's the guidance at this point, or do you not even really know what the fall is going to look like yet?
Yeah, we really don't know. The guidance so far has been that the virus will provide the timeline, and you know, right now Illinois is in phase three, and looking like we're moving towards phase four, but, you know, I'm concerned because looking at other states' data, the states that have opened up their economies maybe a month before us, their rates of infection are going back up. So, I mean, that's, you know, I'm not trying to predict the future here, but as I look at what's happened in other states, it's a reasonable assumption that maybe our numbers will go back up as rules get relaxed. So, if the numbers go back up, we could go right back to remote learning for a protracted period of time, and but we don't know until we get to that stage. We just don't know. And so far, the guidance from the state board has been it's going to be a local decision based on the numbers, and that's very frustrating from our perspective. That they're kind of just leaving us out there to say, well, it's going to be your call.
Yeah, kind of funny that the state would have so much direction on all aspects of this up until the point to where push comes to shove here.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and that's the part that we've been pushing back on a little bit down in Springfield, saying, look, there are a whole litany of things that you make us do every year that we don't really want to do, and now you're saying local control on this one issue. If you want to give me local control, I'll take the reins with it, and I can do a whole lot of stuff, but it seems like they're picking and choosing when they decide it's local control.
So it sounds like then, if it's going to be up to you, at least at this point, it sounds like maybe you're kind of making a worst case scenario here, and maybe kind of, I would imagine, planning for remote learning to some degree.
Well, we have to be. We have to be planning for remote learning because that's something that we're not innately just ready to do. You know, we did it last spring, and I commend everybody that was involved in doing as well as we did, but that was on very short notice. And so we're trying to hone that craft down to a better delivery system for the fall, if that's what we have to do. And there could be situations where we're in part remote, in part in person. We could be floating back and forth all year, depending on a host of different factors that we really don't control right now. So there are a lot of things up in the air, and we know, unfortunately, some of the ripple effect of that is some of our staffing may be affected because if we're not going to be in person, we have a number of employees that it will be more difficult to find a role for them if we don't have students actually in the building.
And speaking of that, then there's the double whammy of, as you told the board last night, even though we were kind of given the impression that state funding might come out of this okay, state and local funding both may take a bit of at least a short-term hit here.
Yeah, and it could be a longer-term hit, too. I mean, we don't know because it depends on how quickly the economy rebounds from whenever this whole thing is over or at least mitigated. And you know, we could be seeing reduced property tax collections. I would anticipate we would definitely see reduced. To what degree is going to be the question.
Mm-hmm.
And then state support, they've told us we're going to get flat funding, but as I said at the board meeting last night, they told the headline was states providing flat funding, and then whisper behind the scenes as well, only count on that until December. And then after that, there's a whole host of assumptions that were made to provide those numbers to make them work out. And the two biggest ones on those assumptions were that the graduated income tax issue would pass the referendum ballot when everybody votes in November. And second of all, that the federal government is going to forgive the money that they gave the state. So those two things have to happen for the best case scenario, and that's the flat funding that we have right now. If one of those things doesn't happen or if neither of those things happens, the state's going to have to be forced to start cutting its support in some areas.
Okay. And do you have an idea of dollar-wise what that could mean yet, or is it too soon to tell?
Well, we gave a worst-case scenario last night, and so understand when I say this number, it is an absolute worst-case scenario. But the worst-case scenario is around $11.5 million shortfall.
Wow.
I don't believe it will get that bad. However, I also cautioned the board and the public that was listening last night, let's just not assume this is a one-year problem. This is going to be a multi-year problem.
Right.
And so we need to be very careful with how we spend our money. We should always be careful, but we should need to be extra careful with how we spend our money because, as the district has found in the past, when you deficit spend for a while, you have to cut much deeper to get out of that hole. So any money you don't spend today compounds in savings in subsequent years. So we're trying to be very careful with how we do that so that we don't affect programs.
And to say nothing of the fact that you've got a lot of important things going on in the district right now, and that could having less money could end up taking a hit on some of those other things, albeit, you know, that stuff like construction is different than salaries, but still it could all trickle down, couldn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, they're interrelated. The funding for the buildings is separate, and we do have that secured. But, you know, at the same time, that comes out of property taxes, and so we have to be very careful with how much we tax people's property because we don't want to be one more reason people are having a hard time making ends meet.
So, exactly.
You know, we've got to continue to be very careful in that area as well. And, you know, we just got a lot of things up in the air right now. We've got, obviously, COVID-19 is a huge unknown. We're fairly confident our buildings will be done because the trajectory is very good, but we still have the possibility of a shutdown if something were to happen with COVID, although we don't have any indication that that's going to happen, but it's still a possibility. And then, you know, we're still negotiating a collective bargaining agreement with our teachers. So we've got a lot of things going on this summer.
In terms of, by the way, I know we've reported on this, but just to make sure we're clear, when we're talking about the staff that may be affected by reductions in force, what specifically are you talking about?
Well, there's a whole bunch of different groups of people we're talking about. So one group is our differentials, which means our stipends. So our coaches, our sponsors, all of those extra positions that we pay are otherwise, mostly, for the most part, we already have those employees, they're doing extra work. So think football coaches, think class sponsor, think wrestling coaches, volleyball coaches, what have you. That's one area. If we're not going to have sports next year, the discussion is should we be paying the coaches? It's not their fault, obviously, and so that's part of the discussion. And then we have our secretaries in our buildings. We have non-licensed folks in our central office, the exempt staff there. We have the security personnel. We have the nurses. We have the paraprofessionals. We have the food service workers. We have the custodians and maintenance workers.
So that's a significant portion of your workforce there.
Yeah, it's about a third.
Wow. Okay. So what's I guess kind of on a broad perspective, what's been going otherwise through your mind through all of this? This is, you know, I struggle a lot with this only because, you know, I think we all want to return to some sense of normalcy, but one, that's easier said than done. But two, this is, you know, you've got a lot of unknowns. And I think you kind of touched on it earlier when, frankly, you kind of maybe suggested that the state isn't being your friend in all this.
Well, and they're in a bad spot. I want to be sympathetic to them to a certain degree. However, when you look at what are the long-term ramifications of the state not ever getting its fiscal house in order, well, we're experiencing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a tremendous backlog of unpaid bills from the state. Over the past 10 years, the economy has been growing, and rather than paying down our backlog of bills, the state hasn't done that. They've continued to spend the money. And we're grateful for some of that because some of it's gone to education funding, so don't get me wrong. But at the end of the day, when you don't pay back your bills, those still have to be paid.
Right.
And now all of a sudden you're going to see a tremendous deduction decrease in your revenue. And nobody could have foreseen it, don't get me wrong. I mean, I don't want to really start throwing knives at them completely, but at some point I want to say, what did you think was going to happen? You
right.
have to pay your bill. And it's just been a complete put the head in the sand and hope it goes away. And you know, we are all collectively going to pay for this in the state of Illinois until they get that fiscal house in order.
And frankly, I think a lot of people want to blame the current governor for all this, but again, the bill backlog started well before the current governor.
This started in about 1985.
Yeah.
So we're talking about many elected legislators who are no longer in office or are no longer alive. I mean, we're talking about decades of fiscal mismanagement by the state of Illinois and you know, really never going after the issues. And similar to the issue I was talking about earlier, where every year you save a little bit of money, that's money you don't have to cut later. Well, Illinois never actually faced that reality.
Yeah.
And so you have about 35 years or, you know, maybe 40 years of living in denial. Well, at some point, that has to be addressed. And now we have to address it with a drastic reduction in revenue from the state. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this thing plays out because it's, you know, I can't see a way out where people aren't going to have to experience the pain on this as a state level because we just don't, we've never put our fiscal house in order at the state level that just needs to be done.
Okay. So, I guess maybe in sort of a worst case scenario in terms of having to issue RIF notices or reduction in force notices, you issue them and then all of a sudden you find out you're not going to be doing remote learning. You'll be back in classrooms and you'll get the chance to, based on finances partially, to call some of those people back.
Exactly. I mean, more of this has to do with whether or not we're in school. If we were in school, we would not really be looking at drastic reductions in force at all. I mean, we obviously would need to look at every position, but, you know, we have them in place for a reason now.
Mm-hmm.
And if all the children were in school and we were doing business as usual, yeah, the lion's share, vast majority, or all of those employees would still stay employed. But if we are in a remote learning for a protracted amount of time, as I said before, it's more difficult to keep those positions when we don't really have the work for them to perform.
Okay, so we'll keep track of that here in the coming weeks for sure. Before I let you go, John, I wanted to get your perspective, and maybe this will have some bearing on what you do in terms of staff and coaches and things like that. The IHSA's return to play guidelines that were announced and approved by the state last week. What are some of your thoughts on that? Is that a workable situation here?
For now, I believe it is. We met this morning, and we're going over a lot of the finer points of that. We have to train our people that are going to be supervising those areas to make sure that we do everything we're supposed to do to keep people safe, like taking temperatures and asking them the questions about their how they're feeling and things like that so that we know if we're keeping people out that may possibly be a carrier and then keeping them safe while they're in there and monitoring that very, very, very strictly. You know, right now we feel like what has been what has been dictated to us, we think is able to be done. You know, I wasn't sitting at the table, and so I'm really not. I don't want to be hypercritical, although I thought it was kind of humorous that they said you couldn't do any. You could do conditioning, so you could do weightlifting and running, but you couldn't do any sports specific activity. And I just said, well, what does cross country do then? Do they just sit down? I'm like, you know, that isn't running what cross country does. So
yeah,
that seems a little odd to me. But you know, those are the guidelines. So. You know, we're going to stick to them, and as I've said on here before, we don't have to agree with everything. We just have to follow it. So, you know, we're going to follow those guidelines, and we're going to monitor those very strictly. And as always is the case, our students and staff safety is the most important thing. So that's going to be at the top of everybody's priority list.
That said, I kind of smell an unfunded mandate here, having to, you know, deal with some of the ancillary issues of bringing kids back to practice and things like that.
Yeah, there's definitely some money involved in it, and you know we're going to have to invest in a lot more masks and face shields and gowns and thermometers and cleaning equipment and you know disinfectant and all those things that you know if you think about it, and this isn't sport specific, so this is imagining we go back to school in the fall.
Yeah,
we just ordered 50,000 masks. Okay,
wow,
50,000 masks. Well, if we got disposable masks and everybody used one every day. We had 50,000 masks. We said we'd make it 12 days and we'd be out.
Hmm.
So, you know, we're going to have to come up with a more workable plan than ordering 50,000 masks every week and a half.
Right.
So we're also looking at washable masks and encouraging people to wear those, so that we're not continually just ordering disposable masks time and time again, because that's obviously going to become so cost prohibitive that we're gonna have to look at alternatives, but we have to keep people safe first. So that's always going to be a part of this.
Somehow, I just envisioned admission to Meet the Streaks night being a Gatorade or a can of Lysol, though.
Bring a case of masks and some gloves and Lysol, and yeah, you can get in.
There you go. Fair enough.
That sounds like a good plan.
It's a fantastic plan. Why didn't I think of that soon? You know, you should have had me on this earlier.
You know, on March 11th, I should have had you on the task force. We could have this all figured out.
Just what I need to be on a task force. All right. All right. So at least, I guess, worst case scenario, at least you're doing, at least in terms of the athletic part of this year, you're doing something for the kids. And I guess ultimately, you know, while not the greatest thing in the world, it's not a bad thing either.
No, it's not. And we're also, for those parents that are out there that are listening, saying, what about driver's ed? We also have a plan for behind-the-wheel driver's ed this summer, too, to try to get some of our kids the driving time they need so that they can get their licenses. So we know that's extremely important to people, and so that's going to be part of the plan as well.
There you go. All right. Anything else we should know about any of this, John?
Well, I think you definitely are caught up on it, and it's a very large, encompassing issue. And, you know, we lose a lot. I'm not going to lie. We lose a lot of sleep over the prospect of perhaps, you know, taking somebody's livelihood away. It's a terrible mm-hmm. situation. You know, we don't want to be here, and you know, we're taking these decisions very seriously, and want to do what we can to preserve the livelihoods of all of our people. And it's, you know, it's a very difficult situation to think of the short term needs versus the long term needs, and that's what the board's been tasked to do. And you know, we have seven wonderful people on the board who are trying their best to make sense of all this, and we're doing our best to help them understand it. And, you know, I guess I would just ask for people to give those poor folks their sympathy, and no one's asked for this kind of mess to be in, and it's just, it's really challenging.
Certainly not. I know there are going to be people who think otherwise, but I think on the whole, you're trying to do the best job you can with the circumstances you have here. Again, I need speech today for some reason. Galesburg School District Superintendent John Asplin, thanks so much once again, and best of luck as you try to figure all this out.
As always, thank you for letting me come on, and I'm happy to come on anytime you need, because this is a very detailed and esoteric discussion that we need to have, and it's very complicated, and we try to make it as simple as we can, but there are thousands of different factors going into this, so I really appreciate the opportunity coming on.
John Asplin, thank you again. Stay tuned. We'll come back with more next on Galesburg's Evening News.